Thank you, Larry. That was beautiful. I enjoyed it very much, the part I heard. Thank you. We're here now for the 7 steps to awakening. And we are going to begin with quote number 331. And what I am doing now is posting in the room a link to number 331 in my personal journal. As usual, before I get started, I'd like to begin with a moment of silence. And if you all would join me, I would appreciate it. Amen. All right, then. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be reading from a book called The 7 Steps to Awakening, and then sharing from my journal, which is based on contemplating the quotes in this book. Now, if anybody is on the radio listening, I know particularly on Monday some people are, let me just give you a link to number 331 in my journal, which is where we're going to begin. The link is RDA7, it's the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And once you get to the journal, if you look up on the menu bar, you'll find step 1, step 2, and step 3. We are currently on step 2, so click on step 2. And then find the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 331. And go ahead and make your way to 331, because that is where we are going to begin. And first I'm going to read from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. I'm on page 66. The quotes right now are coming from another book called The Supreme Yoga. And this is quote number 331. This world and this creation is nothing but memory, dream. Distance, measures of time like a moment and an age. All these are hallucinations. So we're continuing right where we left off last night with the world does not exist. It's the same as A Course in Miracles, Lesson 132. Again, the quote from the Supreme Yoga. This world and this creation is nothing but memory, dream. Distance, we call that space, measures of time like a moment and an age. All these are hallucinations. All right, let's look at the journal number 331. The mind holds on to the perception of world, and so the dream seems to persist. The mind holds on because of the seeming reality of the dream. But that which the mind deems so real is not like reality at all. The mind experiences a body moving in a world, going from place to place. It experiences memories of the past and anticipation of a future. It experiences a lifetime of growing, maturing, and growing old, and it says, this is real. Yet anything that begins and ends is not real. Anything that changes is not real. Reality is constant. Change is the nature of a dream. So this teaching that's coming through in number 331 is being repeated over and over right now in this part of my journal, in this step two. And the reason it's being repeated over and over right now is because, although on the one hand, we accept that the world is not real, to some degree or the other, on the other hand, we totally get caught up in it as if it is real. You know, when a problem seems to arise, that problem becomes very important. When someone says something that offends us or flatters us, that offense or that flattery is very meaningful. For many people, as they watch the body age, that is fretful. Or as the body gets sick, that is, you know, worrisome. So on the one hand, we accept that the world is not real. But on the other hand, we continue to be caught up in it as if it is. And so what is being given here is a criteria that is easy to understand, that we can continually return to in order to discern if something is real or not. And the criteria is very simple. Anything that begins and ends is not real. Anything at all. If it has a beginning and an ending, it's not real. And anything that changes is not real. Simple, simple criteria. Now, some of what we look at may seem to be emotional for us. You know, for example, a parent looking at a child. You know, every parent knows that their child had a beginning. And although most parents, you know, prefer not to think about it, every parent knows that their child will have an end. So regardless of how important our children seem to be to us, regardless of how much we love them, regardless of how much we worry about them, regardless of how much we celebrate their successes, regardless of how much we stare at them and think that their face is the most beautiful face in the entire world, we can still apply this criteria. That emotional attachment does not get in the way of this clarity. I can look at my child and I can ask simply the question, does this, which I am looking at, this personality, this body, does this have a beginning and an ending? The answer is yes. My emotional attachment to it doesn't get in the way of that clarity. And then the second question, does this which I'm looking at, which I, you know, seem to love so much, which has been the center focus of my life for many years, does it change? I mean, the answer is yes. It was a baby, and then it was a 2-year-old, and then it was a 5-year-old, and then it was a 10-year-old, and then it was a 15-year-old, and then it was an adult. It's gone through many phases. It changes. Well, then it's not real. What about this problem that came up today? This problem that wasn't here yesterday that now seems to be so incredibly threatening. It seems like I need to spend every moment of my day figuring out how to solve this problem. Something very important to me is at stake. Did this problem have a beginning? Yes, it wasn't here yesterday. Will this problem end? Yes, in one way or another, regardless of whether I like the results or do not like the results, at some point, this problem will not be the center of my life anymore. Then it's not real. Does this problem change? Yes, it's not going to be a constant presence in my life. There, in some way, it's going to get worse or in my perception, or it's going to get better, you know, looser in my perception. It's going to be solved or resolved in one way or another. There's no way it's going to stay the same. Well, then it's not real. I can even take these criteria and look at what I call myself, this Regina person. Did it have a beginning? I don't have a conscious memory of its beginning, but still I know that it did. I do know that. There's not enough delusion in me to think that this Regina person has lasted forever. I know this Regina person had a beginning. And will it have an ending? It appears that is so. Every other person I've known had an ending. Does this Regina person change? Oh yeah. This Regina person has changed a lot in this lifetime. Her spirituality alone has changed. Her ideas of right and wrong have changed. Her ideas of God have changed. Her reactions to events have changed. Her emotional stability has changed from being not stable to being stable. But there's been change. No doubt about it. The body aging, right? Then it's not real. You know, the mind is very, very persistent in trying to hold on to the idea that the world is real. And it uses things like our problems, our self, and our loved ones to keep us attached to the idea of the world being real. These things that are most important to us are the ego's strongest tools. But if we want to, in spite of how attached we are to the self, to the important people in our lives, to the problem of the day, if we want to, we can apply these criteria to those important matters. And something in us, as we apply this criteria with reason, something in us will detach at least a little. Because we do accept that the world is not real to some degree. So number 331, the mind holds on to the perception of world. And so the dream seems to persist. The mind holds on because of the seeming reality of the dream. But that which the mind deems so real is not like reality at all. The mind experiences a body moving in a world going from place to place. It experiences memories of the past and anticipation of a future. It experiences a lifetime of growing, maturing, and growing old. And it says, this is real. Yet anything that begins and ends is not real. Anything that changes is not real. Reality is constant. Change is the nature of dream. And we can scroll down and click on number 332, which you'll find below the comment and reply area. I'll also paste a link in the room. I'm returning to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and I will read the next quote from the Supreme Yoga, and this is the quote. Liberation is the realization of the total non-existence of the universe as such. This is different from a mere denial of the existence of the ego and the universe. The latter is only half knowledge. Now, this is interesting because I mentioned that to some degree we accept that the world is not real, but I also mentioned that we get caught up in the world, right? And this next quote is referring to that half-knowledge. That on the one hand, denying that it's real, and on the next hand, getting completely caught up in whatever's right in front of us as if it is real. And that half-knowledge is not liberation, right? because we still get caught up. You can't be liberated as long as you can still get caught up. You know, if we imagine the world, the belief in the world as being like a net, you know, we were just walking through the woods one day and this net fell on us and we're all caught up in this net. If we somehow begin to get ourselves free, I can now reach out of the net and I can, you know, touch the grass and the flowers around me. And that feels a whole lot better than being completely caught up in the net. So I really enjoy that. And I can, you know, get my head out. I got my head out and now, you know, that feels a lot more freeing and I really like that. Now even one leg, I've got one leg out, you know, and that feels really good. One arm, my head and one leg out, but I still got my other arm and my other leg caught up in the net. Am I free to continue my walk in the woods? I'm not free. I feel way better than I did when my entire body was caught up in the net. There's some breathing going on. There's some relaxing going on. I'm feeling a lot more confident that I'm going to completely find my way out of this net. But if I'm even partially caught in the net, even if I get my other arm out, and now the only thing that's still caught in this net and I can't seem to get it out is my leg, I'm still not free. There isn't really such a thing as partial freedom. Even though we feel better and better, the more and more free we become from this net, there isn't really such a thing as partial freedom. If you have to say, even with one leg caught in the net, are you free or not? We have to say, no, I am not. I still can't get this leg out. Right? So there's no such thing as partial liberation. Liberation is the realization, the total realization, not the acceptance to some degree, of the total non-existence of the universe as such. Liberation is the realization of the total non-existence of the universe as such. This is different from a mere denial of the existence of the ego and the universe. So, yeah, I guess we're busted. Busted by the Supreme Yoga. And it's funny because I don't know when this book was written. I get the feeling it's an ancient book. I don't actually know. Maybe later I'll look at it. It's not an ancient book? The Supreme. Oh, you don't know either. So us as people, those of us who are sitting here today, who have studied A Course in Miracles, et cetera, et cetera, whatever hand wrote down the Supreme Yoga, this person did not know us persons, right? Not in an individual level. We weren't known by this writer, whoever this writer was. And yet this writer knows us. This writer knows about our mere denial of the existence of the ego and the universe. This writer knows how we say the world is not real, the ego is not real, and yet we go right on getting caught up in the world and caught up in the ego. This writer knows us because this is the way all humans who are caught in the net and then partially caught in the net are. Those who are fully caught in the net probably are not at all denying the existence of the universe or the ego. Those fully caught in the net are just fully caught in the net. But those of us who are partially free, to some degree, we're saying there is no ego, there is no world, there is no ego, there is no world. What the hell do you mean my bills went up? Right? You know? What do you mean, you know, gas is more expensive? What do you mean, you know, water is more expensive? What do you mean milk and bread are more expensive, you know? So this writer knew us because we're all the same. And so we're busted. Busted thinking that we're liberated when we're not. Thinking that we are more spiritually advanced than we are. Because we can say, the ego is not real and the world is not real. Liberation is the realization of the total non-existence of the universe as such. This is different from a mere denial of the existence of the ego and the universe. The latter is only half knowledge, therefore half caught in the net, which means caught in the net. half caught is still caught. All right, let's look at number 332 in the journal. While one is still dreaming, awakened knowledge begins to dawn. This knowledge, being true, is accepted, and the experience of the dream changes as a result. However, this new experience with awakened knowledge is still dream. In true awakeness, there is no change. In true awakeness, there is only reality. This means that in true awakeness, there is no world and there is no self experiencing a world. Be clear on this. The ego loves it when we allow ourselves to be deluded into thinking somehow we are these super spiritual beings, so enlightened. We know the world is not real. We know the ego is not real. We know that constancy is the only truth. Yada, yada, yada. Yada, yada, yada. There's this yada, yada, yada that's going on here. Now, that doesn't mean, again, that doesn't mean that there isn't awakened knowledge dawning. There is. We know that. I just heard Larry. I heard 5 minutes of Larry is all I heard. I only needed to hear 5 minutes of Larry to recognize this awakened knowledge dawning. It seemed to be Larry speaking. It could have been me. Same awakened knowledge. It could have been any other number of people speaking those words that he spoke. Because awakened knowledge is dawning. And we do accept it to some degree. Depending on where we are, more or less degree. But we do accept it to some degree, or we wouldn't even be here. You know, we've got an arm out of the net, or a leg out of the net, or a head out of the net. And the more that we're out of the net, the more our perception of the world is changing. We may not get upset in the ways that we used to. We may not worry in the ways that we used to. There may be this unexplainable trust about the way we live in the world. The past may literally be disappearing. Larry spoke of that. I experienced that to a pretty strong degree. All of this can be happening. And it doesn't mean that we are free. But the ego would love for us to think we are. The ego would love for us, with still one foot caught in the net, say, that's it, I'm out, I'm free, I'm awake, that's it, I'm done. Now let me, you know, tell everybody else how awake I am. Let me tell other people how to become awake like me, and yet my foot's still caught in the net. And what we call Holy Spirit knows of this tendency. In fact, the tendency shows up in NTI. It shows up in NTI Revelation, where Holy Spirit cautions us that one of the last tricks of the ego is leading us to believe that we are awakened or enlightened or free when we are not. And that's because if we can start thinking that, we start to kind of rest our vigilance. And if we rest our vigilance, we do not wake up in this lifetime. And if we do not wake up in this lifetime, then ego has another shot, a real strong shot, in the next lifetime. In the next lifetime, who knows what circumstances we'll be born into. In the next lifetime, maybe we'll be born into the circumstances of, you know, being under a very strict government where there's very little freedom, and it's much more difficult to practice our spirituality, to find like-minded people, and therefore it seems somehow it's weaken us. Maybe in our next lifetime we'll be born into some kind of a disease or some kind of a starvation situation where it's just much more difficult to practice our spirituality. And so there's another delay just because of the circumstances that we were born into of that lifetime. Who knows? What we do know, what every one of us does know, is that something in this lifetime is right for this practice. That's why we're here. Something in this lifetime is right. We are given the opportunity now. And so we want to seize the opportunity now. And a part of seizing the opportunity now is not allowing ourselves to be deluded into thinking that somehow we have accomplished freedom with our foot still stuck in the net. That's a part of the job, this strict honesty. And it's the strict honesty that's being recommended here in number 332. While one is still dreaming, awakened knowledge begins to dawn. Yes, we know that. We can all probably get together for dinner and talk about how our perception has changed, how our reaction to things has changed, and we could be honest in those comments. Because the awakening is happening. Something is, part of the body is out of the net. While one is still dreaming, awakened knowledge begins to dawn. This knowledge, being true, is accepted. And the experience of the dream changes as a result. However, the new experience with awakened knowledge is still dream. In true awakeness, there is no change. I talked about this last night. Even the I that is awakening is not real. So, my experience as Regina, okay, my experience is I am awakening. That's my experience. I am awakening. And I can tell you, and I frequently do, how perception changes as I awaken. And I'm not making up these stories. This is my experience. The problem is there's no Regina. So even Regina's experience of awakening is still a dream. While one is still dreaming, awakened knowledge begins to dawn. This knowledge, being true, is accepted, and the experience of the dream changes as a result. However, this new experience with awakened knowledge is still dream. In true awakeness, there is no change. In true awakeness, there is only reality. So there's no awakening Regina there. There's no awake Regina there. This means that in true awakeness, there is no world, and there is no self experiencing a world. Be clear on this. Asking us to be clear on this is asking us to wait until we are completely out of the net. Well, it's kind of funny, because it's not true. I was going to say, wait until we are completely out of the net to allow the thought, I'm free, to be accepted. But at that point, there would be no I'm free thought. There would be nothing to be free from. There wouldn't be no one to be free. So as long as the thought, I'm free, can still cross the mind, it's still dream. While one is still dreaming, awakened knowledge begins to dawn. This knowledge, being true, is accepted, and the experience of the dream changes as a result. However, this new experience with awakened knowledge is still dream. In true awakeness, there is no change. In true awakeness, there is only reality. This means that in true awakeness, there is no world, and there is no self experiencing a world. Be clear on this. That way we can get completely out of the net. Okay, we can scroll down and click on number 333. I was just looking to see what Dove had quoted, and one of the things he quoted is Jesus from A Course in Miracles, delay in time is tragic. And that's why this 332 has been given, so that we don't, delay by thinking we're done, right? With our foot still in the net. Another net may drop on us because we haven't moved out of that spot yet, right? Delay in time is tragic. All right, let me post a link to 333 in the room. And now he's quoting Jesus again, delay is the deadliest form of denial. That's a good one. Lots of D's in that sentence. Delay is the deadliest form of denial. I'm free as a delay. All right, I'm moving back to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and I am still reading quotes from the Supreme Yoga. In dream, the dream body appears to be real. But when there is an awakening to the fact of dream, the reality of that body vanishes. Even so, the physical body, which is sustained by memory and latent tendencies, is seen to be unreal when they are seen to be unreal. I'll read that again. In dream, the dream body appears to be real. But when there is an awakening to the fact of the dream, the reality of that body vanishes. Even so, the physical body, which is sustained by memory and latent tendencies, is seen to be unreal when they are seen to be unreal. Let's look at the journal. The body, when seen through the eyes of pure awakened knowledge, is as unreal as the mirage stretched across a desert highway. Again, the body, when seen through the eyes of pure awakened knowledge, is as unreal as the mirage stretched across a desert highway. So what this reminds me of is, two things. One is Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi, the body had sarcoma, and the body had what is said to be a very painful death. And so the voice that we call the person of Ramana Maharshi, the speaker that came through that body, right? Well, first of all, this speaker told us that he knew only the constancy of the self. The speaker told us that all he knew was the self, and that was his only experience. And yet, you know, what was perceived by the people around the speaker was a body that was very, very sick and had sarcoma and had a lot of pain. So one of the devotees asked Ramana Maharshi about this, asked if there was pain. And Ramana Maharshi responded by saying, the body always experiences pain. But to the awakened one, the pain is as if in a dream. The body always experiences pain. But to the awakened one, the pain is as if in a dream. In other words, he seemed to be telling us that because of this awakened voice that was speaking through the appearance of this body, the awakened voice did not deny the condition of the body or the experience of the body. What the awakened voice did was seem to express an absolute knowledge that the body nor the pain were real. You know, I don't know what that would be like, but the analogy that's coming into my mind would be kind of like, let's say it's morning time and I'm starting to wake up a little bit and my daughter Jasmine comes in to talk to me and I'm kind of like waking up, but I'm not fully awake yet, you know, and she says to me, Mama, are you dreaming? You know, and I say, well, yeah, I was just in Okinawa a second ago with all of my friends, and it felt really, really good to be with them. But no, I see now that wasn't true. I'm awake. You know, maybe the feeling of being with my friends is still almost present in my chest, my old friends from Okinawa. Very present. I'm waking up to her and I have this smile on my face. And it was really good to see them. But as I wake up, I say, oh, yeah, but that wasn't real. Kind of like there and not there, too, simultaneously, like a mirage. Just 2 days ago, it's kind of funny. I don't see mirages much here in Pueblo. I don't know why. I used to live in Kansas, and I would always see them on the highway. And here we have a very hot sun, and I don't know why, but I don't see mirages here. So it's been a long time since I've seen a mirage. And I happened to be driving down the street the other day, and in front of me there was this very strong appearance of water in the road. And for a split second, there was this thought, you know, literally there was this thought like, oh, we gotta do something, turn the car, we gotta do something. And then, but it only lasted, you know, maybe not even a split second. It was a very quick thought. And then the very next realization was, that's not real. We don't have to do anything. We can just keep right on going. So, you know, if somebody next to me had seen, did you see that on the road? I could have said, yeah, I saw that, but it's not real. Let's just keep right on going. I mean, I saw it too, sure. I saw the same thing you saw, but it's not there. So the body, when seen through the eyes of pure awakened knowledge, it's not saying the body isn't seen. I mean, the mirage was seen, right? But the mirage was not there. So this isn't saying that the body isn't seen. This isn't saying that, you know, what we call people, like Ramana Maharshi and Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, it's not saying that they had no appearance of body, that they were completely unaware of the appearance of body. It's not saying that. It's saying they did see the appearance of body, just like I saw the appearance of water on the road the other day. But they are fully aware it's not real. The body, when seen through the eyes of pure awakened knowledge, is as unreal as the mirage stretched across a desert highway. And so, we can say Ramana Maharshi was free. We can say Nisargadatta was free, and what spoke through those bodies that we perceived is the voice of freedom, the same voice of freedom that we call the Holy Spirit. But that there was actually no person there. There was no one there who believed in a body, believed in a Ramana Maharshi, believed in a Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. They may have answered to those names, possibly. Just like Holy Spirit answers to the name Holy Spirit, but there was no person there. It was awakened knowledge. You know, A Course in Miracles tells us that the Holy Spirit, it's what we call the Holy Spirit can see the dream and knows of reality. But of course, the Holy Spirit never believes the dream. So what we call Sri Ramana Maharshi, that voice that appeared to speak through that body, was also what we call the Holy Spirit. Awakened mind. The voice who spoke through Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, the same. No person there, no world being experienced, just as there was no water being experienced on the highway. And yet somehow the mirage is still seen to the degree that it can continue to communicate with the unawakened part of itself, which we perceive as us, and guide until the awakening is complete. Now, my body, although I accept to some degree, is not what I am. To the greater degree that I accept my body is not what I am, there is more and more of a sense of freedom. There's less and less worry about its appearance, its aging, its illnesses, right? So there's more and more feeling of freedom Yet if you were to ask me, is my body as unreal to me as that mirage was on the highway a couple of days ago, I'd have to say, not quite. No, not quite. No, that mirage was more unreal than this body is. Heck, that highway was more real to me than the mirage, right? And if I had an awakened mind, the highway would have been as equally unreal as the mirage upon it. So I still see a difference between, you know, mirage and the what I would call the real appearances of the world, the more solid appearances of the world. So this is obviously not a fully awakened mind. It's at least partially caught up in the net. When there's no difference between mirage and world, they are the same mirage. Well, that's different. No difference between body and mirage on the highway. Still seen, but not at all thought to be real. Known absolutely not to be real. The body, when seen through the eyes of pure awakened knowledge, is as unreal as the mirage stretched across a desert highway. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 334. Number 334 is very, very short. There is no universe, no distance, no barriers. Again, there is no universe, no distance, no barriers. That's kind of funny when, again, most of us at least started off as Course students or at some point along the way have been Course students. And from the Course, we learned that love cannot be taught. And that our function is merely to seek for and find all of the blocks or obstacles to love's presence, right, and allow them to be removed. And this is telling us, but there are no blocks. There are no barriers. None of it's real, right? One of the many paradoxes we must learn to live with as we awaken. You know, to me, it still feels like it would be an error to say, on the one hand, I do accept that there are no blocks, because on the one hand, I do accept that this whole thing is an illusion, a dream, not true. So even the appearance of a block can't be, because if the block was real, well, then the dream would have to be real. The person would have to be real. The mind that is deluded would have to be real, and none of it's real. So, and I accept that. I feel that in my heart. And at the same time, even as I accept there are no blocks, there are no obstacles, there are no barriers, I still feel guided to sincerely seek for them. It would be an error to me, it feels like an error for me to say, there are no barriers, and therefore stop seeking for them. It seems to me that that would just leave me believing ego. So we can't explain these paradoxes, but somehow the more we get out of the net, the more we're aware there are paradoxes. And they just have to be accepted, and we have to know our own intuitive guidance as to what we are to be doing now. So yeah, no barrier, I accept that. Now let me continue to seek for the apparent barriers. So the Supreme Yoga says, there is no universe, no distance, no barriers. And number 334 in the journal says, while the world seems real, let realization of its unreality seep into mind and heart. While the body seems to be you, moving from place to place, doing, let realization of its unreality seep into mind and heart. While thinking seems to present reasonable circumstances and solutions for your consideration, let realization that you are not the person seep into your mind and heart. Relax into remembrance. So what this seems to be encouraging is the opposite of what I would call, what I think I did call last night, stupidity. The stupidity that the ego, which just appears to be the thinking mind, the stupidity that the ego brings about when it has an intellectual understanding that the world is not real, and then it just gets dumb. You know, it just gets dumb. It, you know, the world is not real, and so, you know, I don't have to call you back. Truth is, I don't like you, and I don't want to call you back, but you know what? The world is real, and I don't have to call you back, because it's not real, you're not real, the problem you're trying to talk to me about is not real. I can just deny the hell out of you, and thank God I don't have to face you again. I mean, you know, it gets like that. I'm scared to death of death. I hate death. Death terrifies me. I'm uncomfortable around death. Oh, my neighbor's husband died? Well, that's just an illusion. It's not real. I don't have to look at it. I don't have to think about it. I hate death. Thank God death is an illusion. I hate death. Thank God death is an illusion. See, there's a stupidity that the ego brings about that actually keeps us from looking at what we need to look at, realizing what we need to realize, and having an honest, sincere, heart-led awakening. It's using all the right words, but its motive is completely wrong. Its motive is still fear. Its motive is still judgment. Its motive is still avoidance. Spirit, what we call spirit, does not encourage this type of denial. In fact, Jesus in A Course in Miracles says that the denial of the body is the most unworthy form of denial. And what he's referring to there is the stupidity. That's really what he's talking about. It's dumb to be stupid is what he's saying in a very fancy way. It's dumb to be stupid. There's nothing worthwhile about being stupid. Why don't you guys just stop being so damn stupid? This is what Jesus is saying. So why don't we listen? Why don't we say, okay, I accept to some degree that the world is not real. I accept to some degree that my body is not real, right? I accept to some degree that I am not this person, Regina. And to the degree that I accept it, I find that I am putting meaning on fewer and fewer things. To the degree that I accept it, I find that I am at peace in more and more situations. But I also realize that I am still partially caught in this net. And so what I want to do is to continue to relax into and open up into acceptance that this is a dream. Even as I find myself getting upset at someone because it's an area where I am still caught in the net, as I observe my own upsetness, I want to realize this upsetness is coming from still believing the world. And I want to open up to seeing that this problem is not meaningful. My reaction to this problem is not meaningful. This other person's reaction to the problem is not meaningful. The person I think I am is not meaningful, even while I'm feeling upset. You know, it is possible, I know because I've done it, it is possible to feel upset. Watch your upsetness. Realize your upsetness is not meaningful. Realize you are not meaningful. Realize this problem is not meaningful. Realize the world is not meaningful, all simultaneously. It's possible. I did it. Heck, I did it Saturday night. Some of you may have seen on Facebook Saturday night that it looked like my dog was dying. She was very sick. So sick that when she wanted us to sleep outside on a cold Colorado night, I agreed to sleep outside with her because I thought there was a distinct possibility that she might pass away, and I just wanted to do it her way. So we went outside and we slept outside. And while I was outside with my dog, you know, there were definitely, you know, there were some thoughts about death and suffering, actually. The thoughts weren't very personal, to be honest. I didn't have thoughts about, you know, me losing my dog. The thoughts were more universal. You know, as I watched her suffering, I thought about all of the people who have ever watched a loved one suffer and how difficult it must be to watch a loved one suffer. Just recently, I I officiated a funeral here, and the family was telling me about how when the woman was dying, about her gurgling and her gasping for breath, and they talked about how both hospice and actually the dying patient herself helped them to feel better about that. But they said, but it was still hard. And why wouldn't it be hard to watch your mother or your wife of 51 years gurgling and gasping for breath and dying? These are the types of thoughts that were in my mind. How difficult these things are, how much suffering there is in the world. I don't think about suffering a lot in my life, because the truth is there isn't a lot of suffering in my life. I haven't lost a close loved one. Sure, I lost my grandmother, but she was 99. It was expected. I haven't lost a parent. I haven't lost a sibling. I haven't lost a child. So suffering has not been close to my personal experience. I do not spend my time thinking about suffering. It's not here. It's not here. But I did a little bit on Saturday night. And in the moments that my mind was going to, I don't know if we call it compassion or empathy, but to thoughts of what might be your suffering, the suffering of people that I've never met with the circumstances they go through, at the same time, there was something in me relaxing into, there's still a belief in suffering here. There's a fear of suffering here. That's the vet right there wanting to know how the dog is, but I'll talk to them later. Obviously, there's still a belief in the world here. Obviously, there's still a belief in Regina here. Obviously, there's still a thought that Regina may have to witness suffering and will suffer from witness suffering. You know, obviously, this is still a place where there's a being caught in the net, right? So there was no denial that these thoughts were coming from this being caught in the net, this belief that suffering is possible and that suffering can lead to suffering, that watching suffering can lead to more suffering, right? And then at the same time that I was looking at all of this, there was something in me. I mean, I wasn't upset, even though I was looking at it. And the reason I wasn't upset is because at the same time, there was this relaxing that was going on, you know, in my heart. This relaxing that was telling me, all right, so this is where we need to open up more. This is where we need to let go more. This is where we need to let realization come in more. So there was a looking, there was no denial, and there was a relaxing into it, an opening up to it. Okay, so this is where there needs to be more opening. Opening to grace is what I would call it. There needs to be more opening to grace here. So we can still find the places where we believe the body is real, we believe the world is real, we believe suffering is real, we believe death is real, you know, we believe taking advantage of each other is real, we believe hurting each other is real. We don't deny that, and yet we say, okay, but because of the degree of acceptance that's here, I know that this believing it's real is just a mistake. And that the only thing that needs to happen is this believing that it's real needs to be taken away. And I relax and open up into and loosen up into letting that be taken away. It can all happen at once. And that's what this is encouraging, right? We don't have to pretend like, we don't have to be afraid of the fact that we're afraid of suffering. So that when we hear about somebody else's spouse suffering, we say, well, it's just an illusion. And then not look at it. That's the stupidity. That's the very unworthy form of denial that Jesus warns us about. Instead, we say, I see that suffering. I notice that, boy, I don't ever want to go through that myself. That means there must be a fear here. I must still be caught in the net here. Okay, so what needs to happen is this needs to be loosened. This belief needs to be loosened. This perception needs to fade. I relax. I relax into the realization that I'm still stuck. And can you see how if you imagine a net, can you imagine how if you're really struggling with the net, you stay stuck? But if you start to relax, then somehow the net itself might loosen, and you can just slip your foot right out. So instead of struggling and being afraid of those places where we're still caught, we say, ah, I'm still caught here. Okay, let me relax. Let me relax and allow the uncaughtness to happen. It's not that I can get myself uncaught. It's that I relax and I allow the uncaughtness to happen. The net itself loosens up when I stop fighting. While the world seems real, let realization of its unreality seep into mind and heart. You see how that's the relaxing right there within the net, relaxing within the net. While the world seems real, let realization of its unreality seep into mind and heart. While the body seems to be you, moving from place to place, doing, let realization of its unreality seep into mind and heart. Relax simultaneously, even while this is all still happening, or appears to be happening. While thinking seems to present reasonable circumstances, we could say reasonable problems, and solutions for your consideration, let realization that you are not the person seep into mind and heart. Relax simultaneously, even while still caught in the net. That's how the net loosens. And then we can just slip out. Relax into remembrance. Relax. All right, we can scroll down and click on number 335. And I will put a link in the room. And I'll take a drink of water. Number 335. It is the nature of appearance to appear to be real, even though it is unreal. Okay, this is the Supreme Yoga that is being quoted. It is the nature of appearance to appear to be real, even though it is unreal. So imagine, you know, the other day when I was driving down the road or in the car with somebody else driving, I think actually Jasmine was driving. And anyway, we were going down the road and I see what looks like water over the road. And imagine that thought kicked in, you know, we have to do something. we're headed for a flood. We have to do something, right? But imagine I didn't instantly see that that was just a crazy thought. Let's imagine I stayed with that thought. I thought, oh, we have to do something. And I asked her to slam on the brakes, and we stopped right there, and we kept looking at the mirage. We never got any closer to it, so it never disappeared. We stayed right there. But the mirage is going to just keep right on looking real. You know, that's what, whatever the physics are that create a mirage at that particular distance from that particular spot, it's going to keep right on appearing real. I can't stop there in that position and wait for the mirage to go away before we proceed. Because the mirage is going to stay being a mirage. I have to somehow realize it's not real, accept it's not real, trust it's not real, and, you know, start moving the car again. And as I get closer to it, then, of course, as you know, it disappears. Well, we can't wait for our lives to appear not real before we quit reacting to them. Because they're going to keep right on appearing real. We have to learn to not react to them out of trust or awareness that they're not real. Just like you have to drive towards a mirage, knowing that it will disappear, that it's not real. If I keep reacting to every problem, every insult, every flattery, every every thing that shows up, because it's showing up, I'm never going to get out of the net. sure it's still showing up. That's what appearances do. I stop reacting anyway. Even though it's still showing up, I stop reacting anyway. I think one of the things that we've told ourselves as Course students that really is not at all helpful . It's kind of a distortion of the you spot it, you got it idea. There is a truth in the you spot it, you got it idea that's helpful, but there's a distortion in it that's not helpful. And the distortion comes from, as long as I can still see it, the error is still in me. There's something there that's wrong. It's not so much as long as I can still see it. It's more as long as I still believe it, as long as I still judge it, as long as I still think it has meaning, then there's an error in me. But the physical seeing of it, or the physical hearing it, the fact that it shows up in my life, does not mean that there's an error. If I'm able to be completely non-reactive, completely non-attached, and that's a place where I have now been released from the net. The fact that I see a mirage is not a problem. The problem is, do I stop with fear when I see the mirage? Do I think I have a problem to solve when I see the mirage? Or do I know the mirage is not true and I just keep right on driving? I don't react at all. It's not the perception that's the problem. It's my belief in the perception, my reaction to the perception. This is what I need to look at. I need to look at how caught up am I in this perception. Appearances appear. But am I looking at that appearance with the awakened mind that knows it's just a mirage, and therefore there's no reaction at all in me, no desire to change it, nothing? Or is there something in me that thinks this shouldn't be? This should be different? Is there something in me that's scared? Something in me that's reaction in reacting with hate, anger, frustration, annoyance? I don't look at the appearance to find where I'm still caught in the net. I look at my reaction and my belief in the appearance to find out where I'm still caught in the net. Appearances appear, that is their nature. Now, how do I perceive the appearance as real or not real, meaningful or not meaningful? That is the question. All right, let's look at number 335 in the journal. The senses are not proof of reality. If the senses were proof of reality, the mirage across the desert highway would be real. Experience is not proof of reality. If experience was proof of reality, the imagined stalker would be real. One who is willing to doubt and question senses and experience is one who is willing to go beyond appearances and realize reality. Okay, so first of all, you know, until we don't anymore, most of us believe, you know, if you see it, you know, what you see is true. If you see it, you believe it, right? I'll believe it when I see it. That's the old saying. I was trying to pull that up into the memory banks. I'll believe it when I see it because seeing is believing, right? That's it. Seeing is believing. And, you know, until we don't believe that anymore, we believe that. So we believe the fact that we see it, taste it, touch it, smell it, hear it, means it's real. In fact, if I was to take this, I have a very big, heavy magnifying glass here that I actually use to hold the books open while I'm teaching. They kind of hold the book open so it won't close on me. If I was to pick up this very big, heavy magnifying glass, put my finger on the desk, and then with all my might strike my finger with this magnifying glass, it'd hurt. And that says, I'm the body, the body's real, the magnifying glass is real. I mean, shit, I feel the pain. So we believe that if we sense it, it's real. We believe that senses are proof of reality. And maybe we believe this so much that at some point in our awakening process, there's an error thought that as we awaken, we should no longer sense. Like I remember, you know, in my first year as a Course student, I met a guy who said he was enlightened. I'm not saying whether he was or wasn't, but at that time, I was just looking at him thinking, is this true? And he said he was enlightened. He was at my house. It was November in Massachusetts, kind of cold outside. And when he got ready to leave my house, he put on a coat and I think a scarf. And my mind said, he can't be enlightened because he still feels cold. Well, I don't know, you know, I don't want to go into whether he's enlightened or not, but I'll tell you what, the fact that he still feels cold had nothing to do with it. Remember what Ramana Maharshi said, the body feels pain, but to the awakened one, it's as if it's in a dream. Right? The eyes see the mirage, but to the intelligent mind, it knows the mirage is not real. You see the similarity? The reason we get confused and think we shouldn't feel cold anymore, we shouldn't feel heat anymore, we shouldn't feel pain anymore, I mean, that should be completely gone, is because the truth is we still believe the senses are proof of reality. And if the world is not real, we should not sense. But what we're hearing here in this teaching is that that's not true. It's not that the sensing stops. It's that we come to have the wisdom to see that what the senses are reporting is not true. And in fact, right now I'm reading this from the Supreme Yoga, and because the people who show up in this room tend to have a lot more faith in A Course in Miracles sometimes than any other form of the teaching, let me just pull out A Course in Miracles. Hold on one second. I'm going to pull out A Course in Miracles, and I'm going to pull out a little something that some of you might have read this morning, actually. Let's see, it'll just take me a minute to find it, because I don't pay any attention to numbers, so I don't know what number lesson we're at. But I know what we're reading. Oh, it's before What is Christ. It's before What is the Body. Somebody just tells me, oh, here's What is the World. It's after that. Where is it? What is sin? This is what I was looking for. What is sin? Okay? Okay, listen to this. This is the second paragraph of What is Sin in the workbook of A Course in Miracles. The body is the instrument the mind made in its striving to deceive itself. The body is the instrument the mind made in its striving to deceive itself. So see, the mind says, if you sense it, it's real. But the mind made the body to reinforce this deception, which means I may sense it, but that doesn't mean it's real. That connection between sensing and reality needs to be broken. That connection is an error put in place by the ego to keep us caught up in the world. Just because when a heavy magnifying glass hits my finger against a desk and I feel pain, that does not mean I am the body. The ego wants me to think it means I'm the body. The ego wants me to believe that's proof that I'm the body. But it is not. The senses are not proof of reality. And if we need some evidence of that in order to help ourselves break that connection, the evidence of that is, for example, a mirage. You can see a mirage across a street, across a road. It looks like there's water there, but you know it's not true. So you know your eyes can deceive you. You know your eyes can deceive you. Senses are not proof of reality, and to some level, we already have proof of that. Go see David Copperfield. Go look at the amazing things David Copperfield does. Your senses are deceiving the heck out of you, and he knows exactly how to make that happen. Seeing doesn't mean anything. Hearing doesn't mean anything. Feeling, tasting doesn't mean anything. Because the body is the instrument the mind made in its striving to deceive itself. I'm turning back to what is the world. We were reading this last week. Those people who are doing the workbook. Let's see, there was something here as well. In the second paragraph, I think. Here we go. Here was perception born, for knowledge could not cause such insane thought. Oh, let me start at the beginning of this paragraph. So I'm going to read the second paragraph of What is the World? The world was made as an attack on God. It symbolizes fear. And what is fear except love's absence? Thus, the world was meant to be a place where God could not enter and where his son could be kept apart from him. Here, in the world, was perception born, for knowledge could not cause such insane thoughts. Now, listen to this sentence. But eyes deceive, and ears hear falsely. Now mistakes become quite possible, for certainty has gone. Why do mistakes become quite possible? Because we believe the senses. Our belief in the senses cause us to be wrong about everything. Eyes deceive and ears hear falsely. Now that we trust our senses and yet they're lying to us, now mistakes become quite possible. For certainty has gone. So the fact that the body may feel cold, the fact that the body may suffer, does not mean I am the body. Appearances appear real. That's the nature of appearances. But the senses are not proof of reality. Experience is not proof of reality. Last night I talked about how, you know, maybe when we were a young person living in our first house or apartment all alone, you know, maybe we heard a noise in the bedroom while we were in the living room. And we hear this noise and it sounds like someone's in the bedroom. You might even remember, oh, that's right, I didn't lock that window, or maybe there's even a sliding glass door that goes into the bedroom. I didn't lock that. Oh, shit, I hear somebody in the bedroom. What the fuck am I going to do? I almost never say that word, but you know when the fear comes, what the fuck am I going to do? There's somebody in the bedroom. So I call the next door neighbor, the guy living next door, and I say, I think there's somebody in the bedroom. Come over, help me. Right, help. I don't know what to do. He comes over with a baseball bat. Very slowly, we creep over to the bedroom, we turn on the light, and there's nothing there. There was never anybody there. I did leave the window open, it blew something over, that's what I heard. It was the wind blowing over a lamp or something, that's what I heard. There was nobody in the bedroom. Because we have experiences like this in our lifetime, I mean, that experience of somebody in the bedroom for me for a time was very, very real enough that I went and got my neighbor, you know? But that it wasn't true. So we know that even experience deceives. You know, how many times have you sat down with maybe your parent or a sibling and talked about something that you recall from your childhood that you thought was very real, and found out that their perspective was so entirely different, you now have to question your own experience. You know, even as humans, we have enough evidence to know that experience is not proof of reality. So the fact that I experience a world, the fact that I experience growing old, the fact that I experience being sick, does not mean any of those things are true. Appearances appear to be real, that is their nature, but that does not make them real. The senses are not proof of reality, and we need to stop thinking they are. Experience is not proof of reality. Just because I experienced it doesn't make it true. If so, then Jesus would still be screaming, "I was crucified! I was crucified! I was crucified!" I mean, there was an experience of being put up on a cross. But experience doesn't make it true. You know this from your nighttime dreams. Think about, you know, a dream, any dream you can remember. Think about your experience in that dream. The fact that you experienced it still does not make it true. The senses are not proof of reality. If the senses were proof of reality, the mirage across the desert highway would be real. Experience is not proof of reality. If experience was proof of reality, the imagined stalker would be real. One who is willing to doubt and question senses and experience is one who is willing to go beyond appearance to realize reality. And again, we just saw in A Course in Miracles that our eyes lie, our ears lie, and in fact, the mind made the body to lie. That's the purpose of the body, is to lie to us about what is real. And if we can accept that to any degree, then we can start to question, start to doubt our own senses and our own experience. And this is the reasonable doubt. This is the healthy doubt. Because continuing to believe my senses and continuing to believe my experiences, continuing to believe the body, which was actually made to lie, which means it's continuing to believe the lies. So I need to start to doubt those things that I have trusted above everything else to tell me the truth, senses and experience. I need to start to doubt those things that I have trusted above everything else, my own senses and my own experience. They were made to lie. If I continue to believe them, I believe the lie. The senses are not proof of reality. If the senses were proof of reality, the mirage across the desert highway would be real. Experience is not proof of reality. If experience was proof of reality, the imagined stalker would be real. One who is willing to doubt and question senses and experience is one who is willing to go beyond appearance to realize reality. Sometimes as course students, we get the idea that, basically if my mind is healed, which means if I know what reality is, then the body should not get sick. And I understand where we get that idea. I see lines in A Course in Miracles that appear to say that. Not all lines, however, in A Course in Miracles appear to say that. Some seem to say something entirely different, so maybe that whole thing needs to be looked at a little closer. But I do understand where the idea comes from. If my mind is completely healed, the body should not get sick, and so we wait for our body not to get sick. We keep waiting for that day when the body will not get sick. But if the body was made to lie, will that really happen? Or is it more that we come to see that I am not the body, therefore I am not sick, even though that appearance is still there? Which one is it? I am not sick, even though that appearance is there. I am not crucified, even though that appearance is there. Are we talking about changing appearances? Or are we talking about coming to see that mirages are not real? Which is it? Which one are we waiting for? Which one is going to free us from the net? Do we wait for the world to change to prove to us who we are? Or do we stop believing in the world? Which one is it? It can't be both. Am I waiting for the world to tell me who I am? Or am I going to stop believing in the world? The senses are not proof of reality. If the senses were proof of reality, the mirage across the desert highway would be real. Experience is not proof of reality. If experience was proof of reality, the imagined stalker would be real. One who is willing to doubt and question senses and experience is one who is willing to go beyond appearance to realize reality. And with that, we can scroll down and click on number 336. I will also put a link in the room. Yeah, and Diana is telling us that senses are interpretation, not direct. Therefore, they're false. And that is certainly a realization I have come to. I remember, of course, Diana, when I thought senses were direct experience. So I understand that thought. But you are absolutely correct. Senses are not direct experience. They are interpretation, and therefore they are false. And what we want to seek is true direct experience. True direct experience awakens. False direct experience or interpretation keeps us sleeping. And the senses are false direct experience. All right, so we are moving on to 336. Again, this is quoting from the Supreme Yoga. In the mind of the deluded, the unreal manifests itself. And when the delusion has been dispelled, there is no longer an ignorant fancy. These fanciful conviction that the unreal is real is deep-rooted by repeated imagination. Again, in the mind of the deluded, the unreal manifests itself. And when the delusion has been dispelled, there is no longer an ignorant fancy. This fanciful conviction that the unreal is real is deep-rooted by repeated imagination. All right, let's look at number 336 in the journal. The unreal seems real through repeated interest, value, and belief. The unreal seems real through repeated interest, value, and belief. Losing interest is the way to undo its seeming reality. Gentle remembrance seeping into mind and heart is the way to lose interest. All right, so I mentioned to you earlier that two things happened in my life in the past week. One was I officiated a funeral, and the family talked to me about, the woman died at home, so the family talked to me about their experience of being with her as she died, and they described to me what it looked like when she could not breathe and she was gurgling and gasping for breath. And then the other thing that happened was that my dog became very, very sick, to the point that I thought that I would lose my dog. And my dog, there was a definite appearance of suffering going on there, to say the least. So both of these things happened actually on the same day. The description of the death, the funeral was in the afternoon, and then my dog's illness was at night. So let's imagine for a moment that what I had done with this, this is not what I did with it, but let's imagine that what I had done with this is to realize, I told you guys that there has not really been suffering in Regina's life. But let's imagine that what I did was I thought, oh, shit, I've been lucky so far. But there's no way that this is going to, there's no way I'm going to be able to avoid this forever. At some point, I'm going to have to come face to face with this suffering that is very real. And let's say I start imagining, you know, stories of suffering that might happen. Maybe I imagine seeing my parents suffer. Maybe even, you know, what would be scariest for me as a parent. Maybe I began to imagine something happening to Jasmine. I imagine seeing that. I just go off the deep end with this fear, panic that I can't handle suffering. I'm very interested in that story of suffering, you see? I mean, heck, there's not even anything happening yet except for my dog being sick, but actually she's better now. But I mean, there's not even anything really happening, and yet because I'm letting these ideas that have appeared in front of me to go into my mind, and I'm putting a lot of emphasis there, and I'm putting a lot of thought there, and a lot of worry there. Heck, I'm suffering right now, and there's not even anything going on. I'm just sitting here in a chair in my house thinking about stuff. The more interest I put into something, the more I experience it. The more meaning I put in something, or the more value, and believe it or not, although we think of value in a positive way, if I'm sitting here really feeling very much that I do not ever want to experience suffering in any way because this is really bad, I can't handle it, blah, 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 blah. I'm actually putting a lot of value there. I'm saying suffering, the appearance of suffering has a lot of power. It's the one thing I can't handle. I can feel my heart beating now. I can't be in the presence of suffering. I'll never survive. I'm putting a lot of value there. And putting a lot of belief there. And at some point, something is going to happen, you know. And because I have prepared myself mentally to not be able to handle it, I'm not going to be able to handle it. Shit, I'm not going to be able to handle it. But that's only because I put so much interest and thought into the idea that I won't be able to handle it. And I see that I'm out of time here. I think you get my point. So let me read this again. The unreal seems real through repeated interest, value, and belief. Where are we being interested in? Where are we putting value and belief in the illusion? The unreal seems real through repeated interest, value, and belief. Losing interest is the way to undo its seeming reality. In other words, notice when my mind is getting caught up in those stories, realize what I'm doing, and start to gently relax into letting go of the story. Start to lose interest. Wait a minute, I do not want my mind to go here. Not because I'm afraid, but because I know it's not wise. I need to take a breath. I need to let go of these stories. I need to relax into allowing spirit to show me differently. Losing interest is the way to undo its seeming reality. Gentle remembrance, remembering that I'm here to lose interest, remembering that I am here to awaken to truth. Gentle remembrance, seeping, it's okay if it's slow, seeping into mind and heart is the way to lose interest. Remembering my purpose is the way to lose interest. And that's it, I'm out of time. So I'll see you guys on Friday with Lynn, but I will not be here next weekend on either Sunday or Monday for Seven Steps because I'll be in Oregon doing an Inner Ramana intensive workshop. But I'll be back in 2 weeks. Bye-bye, everyone.